Welcome back to the program. Today we are joined by Patrick Babb, a German journalist and author, to discuss the massive pressures there currently is on the freedom of expression in Europe and how our various governments are working very hard to reduce this freedom. So thank you very much for coming back on the program.
Always my pleasure, Clem.
We can go into some specific examples, because it's really quite hard to believe the extent to which freedom of speech is being snuffed out across Europe. But I thought a good place to start, though, is how you see the freedom of expression and in what ways it's coming under pressure. Can you, I guess, describe the main mechanisms, both the formal and informal, to reduce the freedom of speech in Europe?
So there is no freedom of speech in the EU, in the European Union anymore. This is not my personal opinion. This is the result of a report of the US Congress of 160 pages published in early February. And according to this US report, the EU Commission established in recent years a system of complete censorship all over the European Union. And the result, let me read that. The result of this Congress report is, so just a moment. EU regime pressured platforms in the internet to suppress lawful speech, including speech that was true simply because it was politically inconvenient. And this is one of the results of this House of Judiciary Committee report of the chairman, Jim Jordan. And it is very clear that the European Commission is transforming itself into a censorship authority against democracy and in opposition to all democratic constitutions all over the map in the European Union.
There's a person we both know, which is Colonel Jacques Bou, who, again, he's a colonel in the Swiss intelligence services. He's retired now. He's very well known for his great analysis, and he has worked for NATO as a Swiss intelligence agent or colonel, and apparently the EU didn't like his analysis. That is, he reached the conclusion that the war in Ukraine had been provoked. Again, one can agree or disagree. I happen to agree with this analysis, but he never had a day in court or anything. He just one day he woke up and the EU put him on sanctions list. Not because he said anything that was false, proven that he's received payments from anywhere, but just because his conclusion or analysis, it was seen as accepting or repeating a Kremlin talking point, which was then seen as advancing the Kremlin narrative. And for this, he was punished with sanctions. What exactly does this situation look like?
Well, I know Colonel Jacques Bou personally, and I visited him in Brussels. He's okay so far, but he's also really nervous, because he is a Swiss citizen living in Belgium. He cannot travel to his homeland. It's not allowed for him to travel. His bank accounts are completely frozen, and all his property is confiscated. The only thing the Belgian state allows is he can take 500 euros a month to buy food. And I heard that the neighbors are cooking for him. So this is just a situation to censor and to bring men under pressure and persons under pressure who don't align to the NATO propaganda and the EU propaganda. And this is completely extra legal. So the EU minister, as the EU ministers created an instrument, a tool to bring people under pressure and to shut their mouths by sanctions, which is completely illegal, and again, against all democratic constitutions in the EU. So the only conclusion I can have, and this is the same conclusion of the US Congress, is European political elites are destroying democracy to stay in power.
What is so shocking, though, with the Colonel Bo is that there's no laws that have been broken, and he's not even in a position to defend his argument. He can't defend himself in court. There is no legal recourse. It's just now you're not allowed to travel. All your assets frozen. You're not allowed to receive help from anyone. And there's no laws for this. It's illegal. It's just sanctioning citizens for who have committed no crimes. It is quite shocking. So for anyone who argues that this US paper is hyperbolic or exaggerating, I mean, it's very hard to justify what has actually been done to him and others for that sake. This is propaganda. This is when governments aren't able to defend their position anymore. Anyone challenging the official truths come under this kind of attack by the government. It is the death of freedom. So, but you've argued, though, that the media has become much more propagandistic. How do you see this as simply being a transitional issue because we're in we're pretty much fighting now a direct war against Russia, or is this simply, or do you think this is permanent? Because it's very hard to go back to normal the way things were after we see European governments doing this kind of things against their own citizens.
I think this is a complete transformation of democracy on the European level into a kind of anti-democratic and warmongering despotism. And this is the goal. According to the Hungarian Minister President Viktor Orban, the EU decided to wage a war against Russia in the next years. And so warmongering and going into new wars and propaganda and censorship, on the other hand, are two sides of the same medal. They want to close up the public debate space to make it easier to bring their own citizens into a new war. And this is very dangerous because the Russian Federation announced that this won't be a war in a Ukrainian style, so a low-level war. So the Russian Federation made very clear that this will become a nuclear war at once. So it's very, very dangerous. But the background of all this warmongering and all this censorship is they lost control over their investments. NATO General Secretary Mark Rutte signed in 2013 as Prime Minister of the Netherlands a contract with the Ukrainian government and the company Shell to explore the gas minerals and the minerals and the gas in eastern Ukraine. So it's an investment of billions. It was an investment of billions. But now all these territories are in Russian hands. So they miscalculated their investments. And now European citizens should die for their profits. And that's the background. And so people is sleeping against the abyss. They don't go to the streets and they don't fight for peace in the European Union. And that is a result of permanent propaganda and permanent censorship in the EU. And I don't believe that the political elites won't stop that. They will go on and go on to stay in power.
Yeah, that's my concern. All these lies which have been told, the lack of accountability, because it's very easy to expose a lot of the lies which they've been telling. I mean, and this is to a large extent what Colonel Jacques Beau was doing as well. He was using Western sources to prove that it doesn't make any sense, that the narratives which they're spinning. But the problem now, of course, is if you win the war, you can write the story afterwards. But we are losing this war. And, well, our political elites are not going to be in a position to write the story afterwards. Indeed, it's going to be proven that everything they've essentially said has been a lie. And it's quite dramatic because we're talking about a legitimacy crisis when governments overstep their democratic mandate in this way. And as these governments become more unpopular, they seem to be, you know, immune from the ballot box. You know, irrespective of what one thinks about the opposition parties across Europe, it is concerning that the most popular party in Germany now, in the polls, is AfD. Again, doesn't matter if people support it or not; they're being criminalized. They're openly talking about banning it. In France, they arrested Le Pen. Just in Romania, the election result was essentially just ignored and cancelled. Let's do it over again. We saw how the Moldovan election was manipulated. And if you mention these things, the governments in Europe essentially comes after you. It's quite scary the way, all this talk about our democracy, our values, how it's just sitting on eggshells essentially. But how significant do you think the role is of self-censorship as well? Because now we're talking about direct censorship, the way they're punished, the way election results are reversed, opposition parties are banned, and citizens are not just smeared, censored, cancelled, but also sanctioned. But in terms of self-censorship, how do you see this changing among journalists or academics?
Well, let me start with my personal experiences as a journalist and book author and the manager of a news channel and interview and analysis channel on YouTube. I'm receiving thousands over thousands of letters. And most people are telling me, you have the courage to say what I cannot say anymore. I cannot have free speech, and I cannot say my personal position, my personal arguments to my colleagues because it is too dangerous. So self-censorship is following censorship. And this is the situation in Germany today and in other countries. The member of the European Parliament, Michael von der Schulenburg, tried to establish a board of people to help Jacques Beau. And he asked professors for justice and all that. And most people refused to join the board because they are living in fear. So what we see right now all over the EU is government by fear and suppression. And this is not democracy. This is an Orwellian dystopy. And we have a lot of instruments to reach this goal. First of all, it is proven by the report of the US Congress that the European Union manipulated 8 elections all over the EU. The most known case is the Romanian case, but also in Slovakia, in France, and other countries. You can download this report in the internet. The next level is internet censorship. The EU Commission invited Meta, Google, TikTok, X, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Rumble, Reddit, and OpenAI and explained completely clearly that they have to manage content in the sense of the EU. If not, they will pay hard sanctions. Hey, they have to pay a lot of money. And this also is not democracy. And then the extra legal sanctions against Gbagbo and 58 other people, not only in the EU, but partly in the EU. And everybody knows that. And on the other hand, the mainstream media, and for me, the so-called propaganda media, don't cover that. They don't report on that. And that means the mainstream media are part of the propaganda system of NATO.
But how do you see the attack, though, on reputations? Because when you say people are afraid to speak up, it's the attack on reputation, which not just affects professional life, but also private life, that this is a key aspect of it. So, you know, like in this country, I noticed this even against myself. We have, you know, governments, sometimes they go indirectly. They finance NGOs. They call them human rights NGOs. Yes. But, you know, you see them, they take, you know, writing all these smears on social media. They would write articles denouncing me as a propagandist for Russia. They write letters to my university, you know, questioning whether or not I should be allowed to work there. They even put pictures of my house on social media after I had to get, after I essentially removed my address from the public realm. And recently we even had the defense minister of Norway coming out. He was making a speech that warning that Norwegians are exposed to Putin's propaganda. And I thought this is weird because Norwegian media only permits one narrative. That is, everything is unprovoked. The Russians, you know, just the new Hitler who wants to restore the Soviet Union. So when he was asked, you know, where do they get Putin's propaganda? And he mentioned my name, only my name. And this is a problem that a journalist essentially shouldn't talk to me because that means they're giving platform. And the great crime, according to him, I said that the NATO had contributed to provoking the war. I mean, if we had open discourse, if you're allowed to discuss what's actually happening in Ukraine, if you want to solve it, it's very easy. It doesn't, I mean, there's an abundance of evidence to prove this. But what I found fascinating, they don't look at the evidence as a way of how to solve a crisis. They see it as almost treasonous that you picked a side of the enemy by suggesting that perhaps we contributed to this. So perhaps there's a political solution. It's quite scary to see how, I mean, this is essentially the executive branch, which is saying this is the official truths which the government has the right to promote, and anyone who goes against it will be then smeared and attacked by the government. I mean, it's just, it's such a far cry away from anything that can be considered to be democratic. Of course, it's not even in the ballpark what has happened to Colonel Gbagbo, but nonetheless. Sorry, I got off point there. I was going to ask, in terms of this reputational pressure, how are you assessing this?
I made the same experience as you in Germany. If you read Wikipedia, or according to the mainstream press in Germany, I was a poll watcher of Mr. Putin during the referenda in the Donbas in fall 2022, which I was not. And I brought this to a court, and the court made in its decision very clear that I was not a poll watcher, that I was on my way as a journalist. But they are repeating all the way the same shit. and responsible for that is, among others, a government-financed and EU-financed so-called non-government organization called Fake Observers. And I was not a fake observer. Absolutely not. So we arrived in a state of fake news, completely fake news. And Jacbeau wrote and published recently a book on that, Government by Fake News. And this is the world we are living in. They are betraying and lying to the people all over the EU, because the reality on the ground, on the battlefield, is completely different to the press reports. And it is completely different to the information of the news shows. They were not on the ground. It's just fantasy. It's just propaganda. And all ideological apparatuses are supporting this propaganda systems. The school, the universities, the so-called non-government organizations, the think tanks, the institutions of the government, and so on and so on. All these institutions and the churches as well, they are all spreading the same and publishing the same propaganda. And that's the problem. So the only way to get out of this propaganda system is for the citizens to make their own investigations and to choose other sources, possibly the new media, and that would be best. But this is the way, by destroying the democratic debate space. This is the way for the established party control to stay in power.
What is interesting with these sanctions, though, is that they come from the EU. So it kind of allows national governments to just assign responsibility to the EU instead. But how do you see this in Germany, though? Which one of these sanctions and pressure comes from the EU directly? And where does the German government come in? Because we mentioned the Swiss kernel in Belgium, but there's also been a lot of sanctions against the German citizens. Some who apparently aren't even able to return back to their own country. Again, this is, you know, we went through a whole Cold War without doing any of these things. It doesn't really communicate a lot of confidence, I guess, in governments when they have to take these dramatic and authoritarian measures. But back to my question. What is the German government doing, if you want to contrast it to the European Union?
So we can identify the actors on the different levels. The head of the EU Commission is a German, Ursula von der Leyen, and she's personally responsible for EU censorship because she approved the campaign on COVID-19. In June 2020. And she started the COVID-19 disinformation monitoring program and forced the internet platforms to report and to delete and to manipulate. And the second one is Vera Jourova, the vice president for values and transparency, and the former head of the EU Commission for Justice. And she managed the whole thing, the discussions with TikTok, Meta, Google, and other platforms. And the third one is Thierry Breton, a former commissioner for the domestic market. And he wrote to Elon Musk on August 12, 2024, we will not hesitate to make full use of our toolbox. That means he set X under pressure. The next one is Prabhat Agarwal, the head of Digital Services Act Enforcement. He has to, he's the manager of all these things. And the fifth one is Renate Nicolai, the Deputy Director General of DG CONNECT, Directorate General for Communications, Networks, Content and Technology. And she has to translate the Digital Services Act into action, into a control of recommander systems. But we have to keep in mind that the national governments are playing a kickback game. So responsible for the sanctions, for example, is the EU Minister Council of the different nations, of the different states. And that means the EU Commission, and on the EU level, will be done what the national governments have decided before. That's the problem. So it is a kickback game. The national governments decide to set somebody on the sanctions list, and they kick to Brussels, and then Brussels has to do. And then the ball will be kicked back to the national level and also to the German level. The German Bundestag transformed the EU sanctions against persons on January 15 into national law and reinforced the sanctions. Any helper of a sanctioned person can be punished and can go to prison for 10 years. And this is completely crazy. And there is no legal ground for that. No legal ground. It is just illegal and is completely voluntarily. So we are not in a government defined by law. It is a government, just a despotism, nothing else. We lost ground of democracy in the European Union.
Is there any source of optimism coming anywhere, though? Do you see any institutions or media, civil society, academia, anyone who is pushing back against this, at least marginally successful? Or where does the hope come in here? Or should we rely on, as we got from the U.S. National Security Strategy of December 2025, put it in the hands of the United States to promote alternative governments in Europe, because that doesn't seem like a very ideal outcome either.
Yes, on the first level, I have to say Europe needs help from outside. And this is exactly what the U.S. Congress did. They published a report because U.S. citizens are affected by that. U.S. citizens are affected by traveling through the EU, and so the rules of the EU are working worldwide. So U.S. citizens are affected by that. And the second level is we both, Glenn, you and me, we can do just our job and make that public, what they are doing to create a consciousness about that. But in the end, people has to fight for their rights, and they don't do that at the moment. We are looking back into a history of democracy of, let me say, 300 years. And all over this time, people had to fight for their rights. And there was a lot of blood flooding out. And now we are in a time we have to go back to these people and we have to fight for our rights. People have to go into the streets and to fight for their democratic rights against anti-democratic elites.
Why do you think this isn't happening yet, though? Because do people not realize what is happening? Because, of course, the media is not going to cover much of this. But also they're not really exposed to any of these, alternative perspectives. I find it shocking because every dissent is simply pushed back as a source of treason. But key important leading officials who no one could accuse of having sympathies with Russia, who still argues that this was provoked, they will simply never appear in the media because you have this very strict narrative control. There, that is, irrespective of what is reality, the information is often assessed by to what extent they support the NATO narrative or the Russian narrative. And this is the simple binary. And anything that doesn't support the NATO narrative is seen as, well, essentially being propaganda. So how do you overcome this?
I think EU citizens have to learn that the mainstream media are part of the propaganda system, and they have to check out for news sources. They have different possibilities. They can use the new media, like your channel or my channel, or in Germany, Nachdenkzeiten, or in the United States, Consortium News, or in Canada, the Post Hill magazine, or something else. And then they can evaluate the situation in a better way. They can trust their eyes and their ears. They have to keep in personal touch to each other and to exchange their experiences. That helps. We are not alone. We are not alone. But I think the majority of German citizens is living actually like zombies in a kind of second reality. And this feeling comes from the corona restrictions. I think most people in Germany are broken. They are frustrated. They are hopeless. And the background are the corona restrictions, which made clear to everybody the arm of the state is very long, and to have, well, only minor chances to stand up to these measures. And many people believed in the corona restrictions, but it is very clear it was politically initiated and not initiated by Metzin. So it is, most people are part of this system of lies, and it's very hard to understand that I lost my life partly in believing in, yeah, let me say, shit. And it's difficult to make that clear for myself, because I'm losing my face looking into the mirror. That's the problem. And I think, well, the only hope is people have to vote for other parties, not for the established party cartel anymore, because this is a warmongering party cartel, and this is a party cartel who is destroying democracy. This is very clear. They have to vote for other parties, and they have to fight for their rights. This is the only way I see.
I'm wondering to what extent, though, this it actually matters who you vote for, because in the UK now, they see this radical alternative possibly coming into power, which would be Nigel Farage. And they think, oh, this is radically different. But then when you turn on the telly and they're time to talk about something Epstein files, which delegitimizes a lot of the British officials and elites appeared in these documents, you know, he says, well, you know, this might be just Russian propaganda, that they are behind the Epstein files, that he was an agent of the Russians. I mean, it's just the worst kind of Russiagating there is. After doing this whole Russiagate of, you know, Trump being a spy, agent of the Kremlin, then you had the Biden laptop being a Russian conspiracy. Now they're actually trying to Russiagate the Epstein files. And it's quite clever in one way, because it doesn't make any sense. You don't need any evidence behind it, because anyone who contests it saying, well, how does that make sense? There's no evidence. Then they are smeared as a Russian asset. So people just go along, it seems. It's quite frustrating. But do you see any alternatives? I mean, across Europe, at least, who would take a radically different stance in the defense of freedom of speech?
Actually not. So the Epstein files show that Epstein was not an agent, a spy of Russia. he was linked to the Mossad and to Israel. That's the one level, that's the first level. And the second level is, it is an introspection of our elites. They do everything. Well, it's completely moral hazard. They are doing everything. So, and this is frustrating the citizens much more, because they learn from the Epstein case that they can do nothing against it. But this is the wrong way of learning from the Epstein files. So we have to learn from the Epstein files that our elites are so decadent that we need new elites. We have to exchange our elites. And this is the only way. So the problem in Germany and possibly in the UK and France is, so this all is in favor of right populistic parties like the AfD. And what we see right now in Germany is a transformation of the AfD into not a peace-loving, from a peace-loving party to a transatlantic party. So in the end, if the AfD will come into power after the next Bundestag elections in Germany, we will have a new instrument of Washington to influence the German government. So it's the same process that we saw in Italy with Ms. Maloney. And Washington tries to repeat this process. And this is part of the new American security strategy. They will bring these parties like AfD and the Right Populists Party into power as an instrument of American influence.
Well, it doesn't give much room for optimism, I guess. But given that from my perspective, a key problem is that we've had this external fear for so long, this essentially the search for internal dissidents or enemies within. This is something that Carl Schmitt was writing about. That is also human beings are faced with an external threat, there's more instinct for group loyalty and solidarity, in which one essentially seeks to snuff out any dissent, anyone deviating from the group and the authorities' official narratives. It just seems that we went through all this decade of searching for internal enemies. That is, first we had the Russia Gate, where everyone, anyone who voted for Brexit or voted for Trump, anyone could be a Russian agent, essentially. And then, of course, this was replaced by COVID, which we also look for in internal enemies to some extent. And then, of course, the Ukraine war, and we're also, the public has to be policed that they have the right opinion. It just seems that, the Europeans need a few years of break to normalize and be allowed again to actually dissent from the governments, because this is my main concern. It's very much been normalized, but given that war is now seen as the justification for restriction, just as a last question, do you think any of this can be restored to normalcy after the Ukraine war is over?
Well, I'm not very optimistic, because we are facing a new century of wars and a century of the destruction of democracies. And this is exactly a result of your analysis, Glenn, as well. We see the decline of the West, of the unipolar world, and the rise of the multipolar world. And in this process, the vessels will see more and more restrictions. The United States will keep the line shorter for the vessels, and they are cutting claims with Russia and China. And that means, in the domestic sphere, a loss of democracy. And Well, the only hope in a global perspective is the rise of the multipolar world and new governments in Asia, in China, in Africa. So the European governments made so many mistakes, from my point of view, that the game is over. We will become the backyard of the United States and the backyard of Russia as well. And my personal dystopia is the Hollywood movie Mad Max. Criminal bandits will cruise around Europe and terrorize the population. And these terrorists are the governments, which are governing, which are running the state against their own people. They are exploiting their own people in favor of themselves and in favor of the United States. Because this war in Ukraine means the transfer of taxpayers' money, of the EU as a whole, to the United States military-industrial complex. So the citizens of Europe will get poorer and poorer. And that's the situation. An increase of exploitation, an increase of the danger of a nuclear war, and, well, a decline of social welfare. This is the new 21st century.
Well, thank you for not just taking time today, but also the work you do on trying to restore some freedom of speech in Europe, and also taking up the case against Colonel Jacques Bou, as this is just a horrible, horrible precedent being set. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your work, Glenn, and it's always a pleasure.